Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. Asian markets are trading mixed this morning on the back of another volatile session on Wall Street. Seoul is up about 0.75%. Tokyo is in the red. And down under, Sydney is on holiday. Joining me now as we break down all the market action is Ryan Huang. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, Michelle.
Let's start this morning in the U.S. state of Washington, just outside Seattle in the town of Redmond, where Microsoft is reporting record profits and sales. It's the first of the big companies to report earnings for the fourth quarter of the year. And they're stellar. Microsoft's revenue topped $50 billion U.S. dollars during the 3 months to December. It's the first time that that's happened ever. Overall, profits are up more than 20%, but investors sold off anyway. We're going to get to that in a moment. Ryan, what is driving Microsoft's profits?
Well, let me sum it up for you. Cloud, gaming, and Windows software, which apparently is not working well for you this morning.
Not at all. I'm looking at a blank screen here today.
Yeah, a bit of a disrupted Windows screen right now. They're trying to restart. So let's dive into the details of the earnings. So if you look at the Intelligent Cloud segment, which contains the Azure Public Cloud, GitHub, and server products like Windows Server, that was up 25.5% at $18.33 billion in revenue, so slightly higher than consensus forecast. If you look at the more personal computing segment, which includes Windows, advertising, devices, and gaming, that's up 15.5%, and that's around $17.47 billion, above consensus forecast of $16.56 billion. And what we heard from the earnings call from Microsoft's finance chief, Amy Hood. She is indicating that demand remains strong across much of the business.
Okay, last week we discussed Microsoft's plans to purchase Activision Blizzard, the maker of games like Candy Crush and Call of Duty and Halo and Doom. The all-cash deal worth nearly $70 billion US dollars will be Microsoft's biggest ever purchase if it does go through. So what do these earnings tell us about Microsoft's capacity to make this purchase?
Yeah, $69 billion. If you look at the net income it just made in this quarter alone, $18.8 billion. So it's just going to take a few quarters for them to make back what they are going to shell out. So that is how much of financial power Microsoft is sitting on. And if you look at where the gaming side is in terms of sales of Xbox machines, that is up 4%. If you look at how it's managing its supply chain, the finance chief, Amy Hood, says, "Now things have been quite tough for the semiconductor shortage situation for the Xbox consoles and service devices, but it says it is able to improve and has been improving its ability to manage these issues and is expecting better than expected supplies of hardware for its hardware side of things." So that is something that is painting a rather optimistic picture for the gaming side of things, and with the potential acquisition of Activision Blizzard, that will really lend more firepower and a bigger growth engine for its gaming business.
All right, so Microsoft's profits are soaring. It's plenty of cash on hand, but the tech giant's share price closed down more than 2% overnight and dropped as much as 4.7% in after-hours trade. So what is it about Microsoft's results, do you think, that is spooking investors, Ryan?
Yeah, it comes down to expectations. We talked about how cloud was one of the growth engines for Microsoft, but apparently not growing fast enough for investors. So it grew 46% in the latest quarter, and this is the first time in two quarters that is under the 50% mark, or rather ends a streak of four quarters that is seen with growth above 50%. So it's been a bit of a disappointment when it comes to the growth numbers per se. But after the earnings call and all the guidance and commentary was given by Microsoft executives, they pointed to an optimistic outlook, and that swung the after trading hours share price back into positive territory again.
Okay, Tesla and Apple are the next big tech companies to report earnings. These numbers come as the Nasdaq is experiencing its worst start to a year since 2008. Ryan, there seems to be two schools of thought right now when it comes to tech. I'm going to take a look at each one. The bulls seem to be in the minority now. What is their argument?
Yeah, so it's been around how the landscape has been changing for the economy. Things are changing fundamentally, and this is being driven by technology, digital transformation, and it's still in its early days if you ask any of the bulls out there, and still much more room to go. If you look at where we are for the transition to EVs, electric vehicles, we still haven't gotten them mainstream, and there's going to be many years of production for batteries, for EVs themselves, for all the infrastructure around EVs, and then the connected devices to maybe the EVs themselves, you know, the phones that might be plugged in, and the IoT side of things, the Internet of Things, where everything's going to be connected to 5G networks. So that is another driver for technology. And of course, people working or used to getting more used to working from home, all the remote working technology and software, that's another side of things. And the metaverse and the cryptocurrency side of things. So you've got technology really at the center of how the global economy is going to be driven. And I haven't even mentioned AI yet. So that gives you an idea of how the new landscape is shaping up.
All long-term trends, a lot of them very long-term trends. What is the bear's take, Ryan?
Okay, here is where the negative side of things are, if you look at it half empty. So we've looked at how easy money has been just sloshing money around the system for many years. And that is now starting to tighten. You've got the Fed, and alongside the Fed, many other central banks talking about normalizing policy, tightening policy, and raising rates. So typically when that happens, it's not great news for tech stocks or growth names. So that's something they're watching out for, because what goes up must come down at some point. And for some of the bears out there, they are saying the valuations that these growth stocks are commanding is just not justified enough. And if you look at what's been happening in some of the names out there, the likes of Peloton, Zoom, Netflix, the boom years may be, you know, over, because with COVID-19, the worst of it at least for now, over, people are just not Zooming as much, not Netflixing as much, and just not exercising at home as much.
All right. Just as, you know, earlier on, my screen was completely blank and taking its sweet time to restart. Things are up now, thankfully. So while some systems might be down, our fence is down as well. So no sitting on the fence for this next question. What is your take? Which camp are you in?
No fence. Oh, dear. I am going with the bulls because of the, I guess, history that I am looking at. Markets seem to always shake off any talk about a correction or any bubbles. After any correction, it continues to go up for many reasons, sometimes inflation, sometimes for what I've been seeing, the money still trying to find a home. And typically that has been in recent years, the stock market. And I don't really see any signs of that changing yet. So for now, I'm a bull.
Let's take a look at the broader markets now. It was another roller coaster of a ride on Wall Street overnight. The swings were not quite as big as those that we saw on Monday, but it still was not for the faint-hearted. The S&P 500 fell nearly 3% before bouncing back into positive territory, then closing down about 1%. Tech stocks led the market lower, with the Nasdaq dropping 2.25%. The Dow finished lower as well. So, Ryan, what is going on? Is this largely jitters over the Fed's announcement this evening, or is there more to it?
Yeah, that seems to be the most often cited factor, the Fed coming up with a decision. And a big question, of course, is what it is going to do. Will it signal a more aggressive stance? And widely, the consensus expectations are for them to talk about a much lift off from zero to higher for its rates, and maybe give some signals about how many rate hikes, how fast the rate hikes will be. So that's going to move the likes of the sectors involved in financials, banks, and energy stocks potentially as well, because these react to higher yields. And we've seen just overnight Bank of America and Citigroup gaining around 2%, and Occidental Petroleum and APA Corporation both up more than 8%. But aside from the Fed, you've got, of course, the geopolitics at play around Ukraine, and that's been also putting pressure, upwards pressure, on commodities like some of the wheat prices and some of the energy prices, especially in natural gas. So that's been in play as well and closely watched because it could feed into inflationary pressures for the wider Europe region because a lot of the energy dependence is centered around Russian supplies and what goes through Ukraine. So that'll be one to watch to see how that situation unfolds.
Now, when investors grow nervous about the economy and sell equities, they typically switch into bonds, pushing their prices up and yields down, but we're not really seeing that happen right now. The yield on the 10-year US Treasury note is 1.78%, which is basically unchanged overnight and only down slightly over the past week. Ryan, why do you think that is? And if investors aren't rotating into bonds, where are they putting their money?
Yeah, I am saying or looking at a possible place where they are going. And that seems to be the safe haven assets. So we are seeing a bit of a rise in the likes of the US dollar. And that is now at 2-week highs. If you look at what's happening for the dollar index, just slightly under 97. And if you look at what's happening for gold prices, that seems to be doing quite well in recent days as well, all reflecting the fading risk appetite these days. And I guess also maybe some investors sitting on the sidelines just trying to wait it out until the dust settles around the Fed, around Ukraine, and what other COVID-19 worries they might have.
Let's turn to Singapore now. Yesterday, this time, we broke down the Monetary Authority of Singapore's surprise decision to tighten monetary policy in the face of rising inflation. MAS announced a slight increase in the rate of appreciation for the Singapore dollar nominal effective exchange rate policy ban, Sing Dollar Near. The move caught the markets off guard as MAS does not have a regularly scheduled policy update on the calendar until March. Now, Ryan, now that economists and analysts have had a little more time to assess this move, what are they saying about it? And does this decrease the likelihood at all of further tightening in April?
So you've got a bit of a mixed opinion around what's happening in April, which is the routine twice a year meeting happening. So some market watchers are saying, no, this is still leaving some room for another move to tighten policy if we see more inflationary pressures playing out. And that could happen if we see prices of housing and property going higher, and if price consumption remains buoyant and maybe more people buy cars. So all those factors, if they play out, could mean overall inflation, headline inflation at least, could go up. And that could just give more to chew on for the MAS and maybe tighten further. And also what's to watch out for is what other central banks will be doing because to a certain extent, you have to be in lockstep with the rest of the world when it comes to what you want your currency strength to be. Because if your currency is too weak, it can mean you are subject to more inflationary pressures being imported because in Singapore, almost everything is bought from overseas. So all the supplies, the raw materials, the commodities, the food comes from other places. And if your currency is weaker, it's going to mean more pain for you and me when it comes to, you know, paying for those things.
The MAS has joined a wave of global policy tightening, if we look at context here, in the run-up to the US Federal Reserve's first meeting of the year that happens this week. Just last week, Indonesia's central bank surprised markets with 300 basis points of staggered hikes in the reserve requirement ratio for banks over the next 8 months. The Fed, meanwhile, is likely to make an announcement this evening that paves the way for it to raise interest rates in March, though there's always a possibility it could surprise markets as well and raise rates now. Ryan, I have three follow-up questions for you. First, how did the Sing dollar react in trading yesterday to the policy move?
Okay, so let's take a quick check with where we are for the Sing dollar. And off that surprise move by the MAS, it traded 0.3% higher versus the US dollar at 1.343. So that is a three-month high.
When the US Federal Reserve raises rates, do you expect this gain to stick?
So that could be the case if you look at what's been happening in terms of the potential moves being priced in. So when you look at some of the projections from the likes of perhaps DBS, let's take a look at what they're saying. The tightening of the policy will increase the Sing dollar's resilience to the recent uptrend in the US dollar. So they have improved their outlook for the US dollar when it comes for the Sing dollar when it comes to strength, mm-hmm. for it to peak at 1.37 instead of 1.39 in the third quarter. And if you look at a projection from Mizuho Bank, mm-hmm. They are looking at a similar range as well for the Sing dollar to be around 1.36 to 1.38 versus the US dollar in the first half. What's worth watching is what happens in the later part of the year. They are expecting the Sing dollar to test 1.33, the Mizuho Bank, and potentially 1.32. And this is as some of the investors and speculators start to dial back on the Fed's hawkish tone. So what we might see is some initial strength before it starts to moderate towards the end of the year for the US dollar.
All right, from the macro themes, let's drill down. It is time for corporate news and a game of up or down. Ryan, are you ready?
Let's go.
Let's start with the meme stock darling, AMC.
All right, AMC is going to be an up. So it's in the news for fast-tracking its plan to refinance its debt. So I think that's pretty good because it just ships it up for better days ahead.
Yeah, could it end up positive for it? Yeah, the former meme darling share price, though, still off more than 50% over the past 3 months. So still a down in my books, I have to say. Let's look at General Motors.
All right, General Motors is going to be an up for me. So it's making more headway into the EV space, splashing $7 billion to make EV plants. So more batteries, and that will help fuel its push into the up-and-coming EV market.
Yeah, I'd say that's an up for General Motors. NVIDIA.
NVIDIA, the chip company, is a down. That is around reports that it might give up its chase for ARM, which has been trying to get from SoftBank Group. So that nearly two-year-long pursuit may come to an end, and there are so many reasons around it, partly because of politics as well, so down for NVIDIA.
Quite a story we've been tracking for the past couple of years, but NVIDIA is reportedly preparing to quietly walk away from a proposed $40 billion US dollar purchase of ARM maker, of chip maker ARM, I should say. This could also be a down for ARM's owner, SoftBank. All right, let's look at C Limited.
Okay, C is going to be an up for me, so it's in the news for investing around $6 million, or at least being part of that round of fundraising in what's a motion capture gaming company called Refract. So this is a company based in Singapore.
Indeed. I'm going to go with up, see investing that $8.5 million in Refract. That's a motion capture gaming startup. I think this could turn out to be a good bet. Plus, for C, $8.5 million is a pretty small amount of money. Our next one might be a bit tough because it is a category, Ryan. Category for you today is Singapore REITs.
I am sitting on the fence on this one.
No.
All right, I've got some REITs doing pretty okay. And no, if you look at the likes of Suntec REIT, they have posted a 9.8% in DPU for their second half of the year. If you look at ALOC also, that has just posted a DPU at around 2.4 cents. And that is slightly lower than the previous year ago, following an enlarged base. FCT, Fraser Centrepoint Trust, is pointing to how things are stable when it comes to the committed occupancy for its retail portfolio at 97.2%. And it says the trust showed a resilient performance despite the continuing impact from COVID-19, and there's still healthy demand for retail spaces. And if I look at Starhill Global REIT, they have posted a 2.3% rise in their first half DPU, and Capital REIT saying it's quietly confident despite a fall in office occupancy. So some people are thinking, hey, I don't need so much space anymore because I can keep my staff at home, or at least some of them, being staggered to come to the office.
Is so that maybe stuff or staff at home?
Staff. So that is just changing the game when it comes to how much office space people might be asking for. So that is a bit mixed for me. It is quietly confident, but you never know with COVID-19 whether that could play out to mean more work from home arrangements becoming the norm. So for the office side of things, it's a bit more cautious. Mm-hmm. For Mapletree Industrial Trust, that's up for its third quarter, 6.4%. And this is something to watch because with all the e-commerce demand and all the logistics play just getting a bit of a bounce in recent quarters, this is something that could enjoy a further uplift. So something of a mixed picture for REITs overall. Mostly optimistic And just a bit of a note of caution around some sectors.
So REITs appear to be improving overall here in Singapore, though slowly. So I'm going to go with an up. All right, let's take a look at today's market action now. We are 24 minutes into the local trading day. Yangtze Chang Shipbuilding led the Straits Times Index lower yesterday. Yangtze Chang tumbled 4.5% amidst a regional sell-off. The STI closed down 1% at 3247. How is the STI trading this morning?
All right, let's take a look at where we are. The Singapore markets are up by 0.6%, 3,267. And a quick look at the STI. Only five counters in the red, right at the bottom. ThaiBev down by 0.8%. And this is followed by ComfortDelGro, JJ Matheson, Venture Corp, and Hong Kong Land. Let's take a look at where we are on the top. We've got Jardine Saka & Carriage up 1.7%, followed by Wilmer. Yangtze Chang Shipbuilding bouncing back is now up by 1.6%. And SIA Genting UOL at the top of the list.
All right, thanks very much. Ryan Huang joining me in Market View. Coming up in minutes, we break down for you the MAS surprise off-cycle move yesterday, tightening monetary policy. What does it mean for your money? That's still to come at 10.05.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.